How is your anxiety? How do you want it to be? Visit quietbegins.com and get the powerful SAFE system for social anxiety. It's like a masterclass on anxiety where you graduate into feeling better. quietbegins.com. Life presents the toughest challenges. Every day you are faced with decisions that test your ability to express who you really want to be in this world. We're told to keep saying affirmations and keep thinking positively, but what do you do when that stuff doesn't work? Welcome to the Overwhelmed Brain, where you'll learn to make decisions that are right for you so that you can create the life you want now. Hello and welcome to the show. My name is Paul Coliani, and I'm here to help you increase your emotional intelligence so that you can avoid dysfunction, handle toxic situations with grace and ease, and show up as your authentic self. Everything I talk about on this show is my personal opinion and is meant for informational and educational purposes only. Always consult a medical or psychological professional before making any changes that could affect your physical or mental health. All right, last week, I talked about how special you weren't. I didn't mean it that way. Don't take this out of context. You are a special person. This week, I'm going to make up for that comment, even though last week I said, you know, you are a special person and it has nothing to do with not being special. It has to do with taking yourself out of the equation in the sense that if you are so focused on people treating you a certain way, you can get obsessed with it. You want people to treat you a certain way because you know you deserve it. You know you're worthy and you are. But when we become obsessed with being treated a certain way, it can really affect our lives. And I just want to kind of make up for any misunderstanding of last week's episode in a way that helps you regard yourself higher. So this is the Regard Yourself Higher episode. This is prompted from an email that I will probably read from momentarily here. But it is the thought of holding yourself in high regard when others don't. And why do that? You could probably think of several reasons, but one of the main reasons I say it's very important that you hold yourself in high regard when others don't, so that you can get out of bad situations. You know, talk about avoiding dysfunction and handling toxic situations with grace and ease. How about just knowing when you're being faced with toxic behavior and honoring and regarding yourself to the point where you tell yourself, look, I will only handle so much. I will only tolerate so much. I am only so resilient to bad behavior. I think a problem that some of us face is that we don't know what bad behavior looks like. And even worse, we think we deserve it at some level. And I hear this over and over and over again. Maybe I did something to prompt that. It's possible. Maybe you did, but maybe it wasn't your fault. It's likely that you were an emotional trigger for someone, because even when you are your greatest self, they get triggered into being their worst. And when you trigger them, that's not your fault. It's just their trigger. But they can create bad behavior in toxic situations. And how do you deal with that? What do you do with that? You know, the easy answer is you call it out. Hey, you're doing something that I don't like. Could you please stop doing that? Or do you realize that you're doing something that I don't like? Do you realize that you're doing something that is hurtful? Do you realize you're making me feel bad? And I know the argument, you can't make anyone feel anything. Let's just skip that. Let's just get right into it. Because when you're with someone and you're vulnerable and you're trusting and you're loving and you can be yourself around them and suddenly they make you feel bad, they do something that makes you feel bad, I think you have every right to say, look, you're doing something that makes me feel bad. Could you please stop doing that? And in a healthy relationship, a healthy person says, oh, I did not know that I was making you feel bad. I am sorry. I hope they don't say it with that staccato monotone voice, but you would hope they would say something healthy and supportive like that. When they say something healthy and supportive like that, you know you're with a pretty decent person. they're going to say, I'm so sorry, I didn't know I was doing that, or I'm so sorry, you're right, I will back off, I just had a bad day. You know, they'll have some excuse or reason, and it could be very valid, and we can give leniency for that. Oh, you had a bad day, just don't take it out on me. You're right, I'll back off. Those are healthy relationship responses. That's not the typical relationship radiation that I talk about in my other podcast, Love and Abuse, and some episodes of The Overwhelmed Brain. I bring up the term relationship radiation because that's what a toxic relationship feels like. It feels like you're around radioactive material and you get sick in that space. You don't like that space. It doesn't feel good. In fact, it burns emotionally. And it can have a physical effect on you as well. But the more you are exposed to this relationship radiation, the sicker you get. Sicker in the sense of, I feel worse and worse every day, or I can never feel better because I'm always under this poison, this injection from my unhealthy partner. And it does not feel very good. Or it doesn't even have to be a partner. It could be a family member. It could be a friend or so-called friend. You know, it could be anyone in your life that is continuously toxic around you. And when you're in that space and you're exposed to this relationship radiation on a day-to-day basis, you start to lose yourself. And this is where you can start holding yourself in lower regard. You can start seeing yourself as less worthy, less lovable, less important. And when you feel these things around someone who is very toxic, you can end up in a traumatic bond situation where you feel both love for them and you feel fear around them. You feel guilty around them. You feel shame around them because they're doing a very good job of making you feel that way. And, you know, I get deeper into those subjects in my Love and Abuse podcast, but this is what the relationship radiation makes up. These are the components. And this is how we can break down psychologically and emotionally when we're around someone that is that toxic. And so when that breakdown occurs, again, we hold ourselves in lower regard. What does that mean? How is that helpful? I think it's helpful to understand that when we're around toxic people, that if we continue to be around them and they continue to do the behavior that makes us feel bad, that makes us feel guilty, shame, hurt, embarrassed, all of the negative stuff that we don't want to feel, then we have to realize that we are exposing ourselves to this radiation. We are exposing ourselves to this toxic behavior. And that is a level of responsibility that it is hard for some people to accept, because they can point the finger and say, but they're doing the bad stuff. I'm not doing the bad stuff. I'm trying everything I can, or at least I thought I was. And then we start to question our own logic. We question our own decision-making. We question our own instincts, because the person that we're with continually points out how we're wrong. This is all in the emotional abuse spectrum. How you can tell there's emotional abuse going on is that the person that you're with is constantly reminding you of how unworthy, unlovable, unintelligent, and unimportant that you are. And they will say it in a loving context, which is hella confusing. It's really a mind job. And when they do that to you, again, you get into a space of lower regard. I regard myself lower than I used to. I got into this relationship, or at least I felt at one time higher regard for myself, but now I don't, because I don't trust myself anymore, or they pointed out all my flaws and now I'm seeing them clearly because they're smart, they must be right, they love me, and I have to trust them because I've been with them for a long time and they've proven trustworthy, and here I am now accepting falsehoods about myself. I need you to drill that in. If you have any false beliefs about yourself, accept that they're falsehoods. Accept that they're wrong. Just accept that you aren't all of those bad things. Accept that you're doing your best, and that's the best you can do. Because when you're not mean-spirited, what are you? You're either neutral, apathetic, or you're sympathetic and compassionate and caring and supportive and generous. And when you're all those things, then you're probably doing the right thing. You're probably doing good things, and bad people, or at least people doing bad behavior, are turning it against you. So I won't get too deep into the complexities and intricacies of emotional abuse and all the components that make up for it, but I do want to zoom out a little bit and help you understand how you might sabotage yourself by holding yourself in a lower regard, putting yourself in a lower space, a lower perception of yourself, viewing yourself as anything less than you really are. Because when you do that, you're more likely to tolerate and be resilient of bad behavior. Those sound like great characteristics. Of course you want to be resilient. Of course you want to have high levels of toleration. That's terrific when you're dealing with a stranger on the street and they're acting crazy or they're doing bad behavior in some way, and you can see through that bad behavior and see that they may have had a bad history, an abusive past, many downfalls in their life. That's great. You can develop that resilience and toleration for people like that. But you shouldn't have to have so much resilience and toleration in a relationship of any sort. Because when you're in a relationship, there's an understanding that there's a reciprocation of caring and love and support and kindness and respect. There should be an understanding of that. And yes, people are going to have bad days. You're going to have 3 months of wonderful days and then one bad day. And you can chalk that up to a bad day. That's going to happen. Someone's going to smash their thumb with a hammer and be ticked off at you all day. And you can realize that that's just the pain talking. And there may be some truth in that pain, but you know, are they normally this person? Does it ever come out when there's not as much pain as this? Or is that really just the pain talking and they have no one else to vent to? They have no one else. They feel safe enough to be a jerk for a day. And that's just who they are today. But then they go back. You know, you can have these bad days and those can be viewed through the eyes of toleration, resilience, love, and acceptance as well, because those are far and few between. Great. Far and few between, no problem. But when the pattern picks up and it's week after week, or day after day, or every other day, and the trend line of love and support and respect is going down and to the right instead of up and to the right, now we have something we need to look at. And that's when you have to say, you know what? I hold myself in high enough regard to step up and stand up for myself. I hold myself in high enough regard, even when they won't do that for me, to step up and stand up for myself. You know, last week's episode was about someone else stepping up in your defense. And I think I did get into this about you stepping up in your own defense and stuff like that. But this episode is how you view yourself so that you don't even have to think about stepping up for yourself. It's not a question. It's just a bullet point on how you live. I live by eating and breathing and drinking water and clothing myself and shelter and standing up for myself when necessary and honoring myself and expecting people to respect me just like I respect them, do unto others as I do unto them, on and on and on. It's just a bullet point. It's a matter of fact. And when you can treat these principles of your life as truths, not just a loose structure of how you want to live, but a true solid structure of how you deserve to live, your life changes. You end up with better relationships. You end up communicating at a whole new level. Because as you've probably heard me say before, if you've listened to the show before, once you show up as your authentic self and you're honoring yourself and you're holding yourself in higher regard and you're proud of yourself and your accomplishments, even if they're infrequent, you like yourself and you even love yourself, when you show up and you just want to be yourself, someone who loves you wants you to be that too. And when you don't get that in return and you have a resistance to that, to you being yourself, that's when people will either adapt and understand that they need to support you as you are, or they'll fall off. They'll fall off the map. They won't want to be around someone who is that empowered. And if that's the case, they either wanted to control you and keep you the way they wanted you, or you were doing something that was against their values and they couldn't stand it, or something else that hopefully is discussed. Hopefully you express to each other what you like and don't like. Hopefully you have a relationship where you can be honest. And if you aren't, it might be time to start so that you know what the relationship is made of. What is the structure? What is the foundation of this relationship? Can it handle honesty? Because if it can't handle honesty and everything is getting swept under the rug or just repressed, then it turns into something destructive later on. And I realize you may be in a relationship for years and years and years, and this is how it's always been. You've never been fully honest with each other. You're afraid to bring up subject matter because there's emotional triggers around it. But it gets to the point where you're going to have to say, look, this is who I am. This is what I want for myself. And this is what I want in a relationship. Can we talk about it? And hopefully they'll say the same thing. You know what? This is what I want in a relationship. And maybe there'll be disagreements. And if that's the case, great. Bring it up. Let's talk about it. Because I've even been in a situation where my girlfriend and I, before we actually got serious, we were on opposite ends of certain things. And there was no way we were going to meet in the middle. But we still did. There was still some give and take. There was still some compromise. There were still small sacrifices, even though that word doesn't really apply. It was just a matter of understanding and open communication and allowing each other to speak our minds, to express, so that we got it all out on the table to find out what really was so important to us and what really wasn't that important after all. You know, I used to have this thought that I never want to leave New Hampshire, at least not for a few years. This is when my girlfriend and I first met. And suddenly, a few days later, I'm thinking, you know, I could leave New Hampshire. You know, I don't mind coming down to Georgia for a while and seeing what it's like. Why was I so stuck? Because I had a past that I kept following my heart. Everywhere the girl went, I followed like a puppy. And I saw that in myself, and I didn't like it. I didn't like that I didn't make my own decisions. That, well, I mean, I did, but I always put my heart first and made every decision about someone else instead of about me. Where do I want to live? Do I really want to move to California? Do I really want to move to Texas? If I had sat and thought with that by myself, the answer would have been no. But since a girl was there, you know, the women in my life, I would follow my heart. I would end up in places I didn't like. But as long as she was there, I would be happy. That was my thought process. And then my current relationship, hopefully my last relationship, I made the choice of, no, I'm not going to follow my heart this time. And it felt really good to honor myself like that, to say something that was empowering to me, even though it could have risked the relationship. Even though she might have said, you know what, then we're not going to go forward anymore. We're not going to talk anymore. It could have ended that way. But it still felt great to be me. And when you can start doing that, again, your life changes. And so there's more to that story I share in other episodes, but needless to say, I did end up moving to Georgia. That's where I am now. And we've been together for many years. Anyway, when we come back, I'm going to read you portions of this email and make some notes on it and hopefully give you some insights and opinions that matter to you, that are valuable to you, so that you can hold yourself in a high regard. Not that you're holding anyone else in a low regard. It's just that I don't want you to be in a situation where you don't value yourself enough to get yourself out of trouble. That's a better place to be than continuous toleration and resilience for someone mistreating you. We'll be right back. Speaking of New Hampshire, heading up there in August to visit family. Both my girlfriend and I have family in New Hampshire, and most of them are great. Most of them are, I'm looking forward to visiting. And there might be a couple that show up that I'm not necessarily looking forward to seeing. And you know, when that happens, I don't necessarily have anxiety about it anymore. I used to. But I might just have to listen to my own program. I might have to listen to the Safe Empowerment System, because it is possible that I might have to deal with certain people. You know, I have all these tools in my head, all these tools on my mental tool belt, and I can pull them out anytime. But sometimes it's hard to get away from certain people. And, you know, your body has old memories, old triggers, old trauma that can kick up, and now you have to deal with it again. And I've dealt with a lot and healed from a lot. So I'm usually prepared for certain family members to show up. Fortunately, this episode is all about holding yourself in high regard, knowing that certain toxic people and certain toxic behaviors are unacceptable in your life. They're unacceptable. You just make that a blanket statement. No, that behavior is unacceptable. And either have them stop the behavior in some way or get away from it. You might have to just do that. And that is possible. I might have to do something like that when I'm up there. And of course, there are times when you just do have to tolerate it until things are over, because you don't want to rock the boat too much, because certain people might get angry. Certain people might, you know, create hardship. Certain people might hold things over your head. Like, well, if you're not going to be a nice person, I'm never going to let you see these kids again, or I'm never going to let you come over and you'll never see your dad again. They do mean things like that. And when they do, how do you handle it? I mean, can you get through it without feeling anxiety, without feeling stress? When you can't, this is what the SAFE system's all about, the Safe Empowerment System for Social Anxiety, not just for social anxiety, but that's just the name, at quietbegins.com. You're going to find that it is like a supercharge for your system, so that you can help yourself get out of anxiety when certain people cause that in you. And so I think that's important. And even though I myself carry around all these amazing, wonderful, helpful mental tools, it doesn't mean I'm not going to get caught off guard. It doesn't mean I'm not going to get emotionally triggered. It doesn't mean I have completely eliminated my fight or flight system. It just means that I'm more prepared, but you never know. And because of that, I think I'll keep a few of the emergency pods in my pocket, those short recordings that help me get through anxiety moments. That's all part of the Safe Empowerment System, and I'm just here to let you know about it in case you need it, in case you're dealing with something that gives you anxiety, or you have constant anxiety and you're trying to get through it, trying to get out of it. This may be the system that really helps you decrease it and perhaps even eliminate it. QuietBegins.com, the Safe Empowerment System. Welcome back. I've been holding on to this email for a while because this is the show where I wanted to talk about it regarding holding yourself in high regard. And this, I'm just going to read portions of this, probably most of it, because there's a lot of takeaways in here. And as I read it, I think I'm going to make some comments, because I've already read this once and I kept thinking of things to say as I was reading it. Like I wanted to talk to this person and say, no, this is what you need to look at. This is what you need to do. And so as I read this, I'll make some comments and then my final comments after I'm done. This is from someone I'm going to call John. John says, hey, Paul, I've come across your podcast and I found it to be highly motivating and helpful. I've recently gone through a breakup, and while in the past I've had breakups, I found myself to be fine and got over them. But this one has taken a toll on me. I was friends with this girl for about a year, and she had a long-term boyfriend, and we all got along great. I was immediately attracted to her. She was confident, charming, and had similar interests to me. We would talk a lot, and she would ask about various dates I would go on, and I never made a move, as I felt that she was in a happy relationship. Well, a few months later, she told me she broke it off with this guy, and almost immediately we started seeing each other. Things were great. I felt like it was everything I wanted. I was so into her. We were in love. Gradually, though, maybe around 3 months, we started to have upsets. Just a quick note, 3 months is the typical time to see a lot of upsets or flags. So this is one of those interruptions where I want to tell you, the person listening, that 3 to 6 months, you're going to start seeing things that will amplify. And if they're bad, they will get worse. So right off the bat, if you see things that you're not comfortable with, you're not happy with, you feel might be a little or might be bad behavior, and it's at the 3-month mark, this is when, you know, you hear about the honeymoon period. This is a good time to start gauging what's going to be, what the future is going to be for this relationship. 3 months is also a good amount of time to fall in love with someone. And this is where you feel like you get sucked in. And this is also why it's important to, I can't believe I'm saying this, hold off on too much love. Hold off on falling in love too much. Meaning you keep your radar on for about 6 months. You just keep watching. Not that you're paranoid, not that you're hyper observant. You're just observant. You're just noticing. You're not letting yourself sink into the comfortable feeling of being with someone fully, trusting them fully. That is the eventuality. Yes, that is where you want to be. But 3 months, I see it over and over again, 2 to 3 months, sometimes up to 6 months, depending on a lot of circumstances, you start seeing behaviors that are more normal, more common, more of the behavior that you're going to see in the relationship from that point on. So just keep that in mind. When you get into a new relationship, first couple months, everything is wonderful. The next month, you start seeing some settling. But if you start to see bad behavior, behavior you don't like, red flags, orange flags, then this is where you perk up and you become a little bit more aware. You become a little bit more sensitive to things in the sense that you are carefully watching how this is unfolding. So that's my first interruption. Let's go back to it. So he says, gradually though, maybe around month 3, we started to have upsets. She would ask questions about my previous relationships, if I was still friends with any of those girls. She made me delete people off of Facebook. One time she asked me to look through my phone, which made me uncomfortable. Yes, those are definitely orange flags, maybe red flags, but I'm already starting to sense some jealousy here. Are you friends with any of your exes? If you have that question come up, then you're probably looking at some insecurities in the other person. Am I friends with my exes? Well, yeah, I mean, I know her and I know her and we sometimes communicate, sometimes we talk. But, you know, they're just friends. But that kind of question that comes up, well, it could be completely innocent. Absolutely. Could be completely innocent. Depends on the context. Depends on the line of questioning that's around it. And it depends on if it comes up again. But that's just, you know, a flag. It's a little yellow or orange flag that you just need to take note of. I wonder why they would ask me that. What's behind that? This is where it's important not to dismiss things. You don't want to automatically dismiss, well, that's a normal question, or, oh, that's cute, they're a little jealous. It could be true. It absolutely could be true, and it could also be true that there's more underneath. So we want to be aware of what's underneath that. Not that we have to necessarily bring it up. I mean, you could ask, what, are you jealous? Do you get jealous? Did you get jealous in your last relationship? Certainly, you can have that kind of conversation. But again, just a small flag that's important to take note of. And of course, she asked to go through his phone as well. I would call that a bigger flag. I don't think I've ever, ever asked my girlfriend if I could go through her phone. That to me is a bigger sign that there's a problem. So the first question about, are you friends with any exes? Yeah, you could find something about that might be innocent. But can I go through your phone? That's pretty darn intrusive, especially in 3 months. I'm going to say that. It's pretty darn intrusive. So I would call that a red flag. And by the time this letter is over, you're going to see that he also has seen these as red flags in hindsight. But let's just continue. And I wanted to mention these things just in case I forgot to after I'm done reading this. He goes on to say, one point she had a lot of issues with me talking to any of my exes. Again, there's another behavior that definitely needs to be you need to be aware of. There's more jealousy, more insecurity coming out there. But she remained friends with her long-term ex, claiming that he was like family, as she had no real family growing up, and that he would never be out of her life. That's an interesting comment. You're not allowed to see your exes, but I'm allowed to see mine. That's the message I'm getting. She may not have said that, but because my ex is like family, and the addition of, he will never be out of my life. that worries me a little bit. Not that you can't have exes as friends. Some exes make the best friends and only friends, and that's how it'll always be. But that can be a yellow flag. Not saying it is, you know, when I met my girlfriend, she said, you know, I have this friend that we never really dated, but maybe we dated once and he'll always be my friend. And if anyone ever stands between me and my friends, you know, they're out of there because my friends take precedent. And I was like, okay, you know, no problem. I was like, no problem at all. And then as we got to know each other, that friend kind of distanced himself and it all worked out. Not that I felt threatened at all, but it's going to get into a point that I'm going to make in a moment about how when you get into a relationship, where does your energy go? Who are you spending time with? Where are you investing your emotional energy? And if it's with these other people, you know, we'll talk about that in a moment. But it is an interesting comment that John made about what she said here, that he'll never be out of her life. So he goes on to say, I never liked that, but eventually I accepted it. They would meet up for lunch sometimes. I got the impression, however, he always wanted her back. That's interesting. That brings up another point that I'll bring up at the end regarding if someone is single or not. Is the ex single, or are they continuing to see your girlfriend or your boyfriend or your husband or your wife? You know, that does raise some questions. Could be completely innocent too, and you have to look at a lot of the components and do they make a bigger picture. 1 out of 100 things, probably nothing to worry about. 5 out of 100 things, 50 out of 100 things? Now we're talking. Now we have a bigger picture. It's starting to form that we're not comfortable with. So he goes on. She would say things like how I needed to treat her better and that I needed to keep making grand gestures and perform better. She would tell me that as soon as the relationship stopped being fun, that she would leave me. It felt like I'd have to constantly praise her. Otherwise, I wasn't doing enough. Wow. You know, you can probably figure this out already. There's some manipulation going on in there. She would say like how I needed to treat her better. Yeah, that could be true, but I needed to keep making grand gestures. Okay, that's a little bit demanding, but okay, maybe we can play with that. Maybe there's some innocence there, but I needed to perform better. Okay, you know, maybe that's true too. But then he said she would tell me that as soon as this relationship would stop being fun, she would leave me. Talk about an absolute, talk about a purely manipulative statement. If you don't continue doing what I want you to do, I'm going to leave you. That is along the same lines as saying, if you don't go back out with me, I'm going to kill myself. I know they're vastly different comments, but it's along the same line of manipulation. And if not guilting you into something, you're being forced to love someone, to give someone attention the way they want, not the way you're comfortable doing. It's not a support of you being yourself. It's a support of you conforming to the way they want you to be. Again, there's give and take in a relationship. There's compromises here and there. But when you present this absolute that you must do this or I'm going to leave, that is just a threat. That is just a threat on love. That is toxic behavior. That is relationship radiation. That is something that you don't want to see in a relationship. So if this was still at the 3-month mark, John, and you wrote this to me while you were still seeing her, I would say you need to move on. I mean, right there. I know that's an absolute too. You need to move on. But when somebody tells you, you better do this or I'll leave, there's no in between. It just jumps right to a conclusion. Where's the in between? Where's the, if we can't have fun together, we need to talk about it and improve things. Where's that? That's gone. If that's not even on the table, then you have no choice. When someone takes choice away from you, you lose happiness. So what she's doing is saying, if you don't make this fun, or if this isn't fun anymore, I'm going to leave you. I'm not responsible for my half of creating the fun. You have to be responsible for it. That may not be true, the way I just said it, but there's a lot of truth to it. And you have to be aware of that. And don't confuse this for healthy behavior. Such as if you said that to someone who was being abusive toward you, if they were doing bad behavior, because this is how you gauge the difference. If someone's doing bad or toxic behavior toward you and you tell them, hey, look, if you don't stop doing this toxic behavior, I'm going to leave. That's totally different. That's totally a healthy comment, a comment that honors you, that supports a healthy, happy home, as opposed to, if you ever stop this good behavior, I'm going to leave. See, that's the difference. So if you are doing everything you can and you're trying, and then they say, well, if you stop doing that, I'm going to leave, and there's no room to talk about it, that's what I'm referring to here. So the comment, if you don't stop doing that, isn't a bad comment in and of itself, but to use it as sort of a threat that you need to show up a certain way when you're not really toxic at all, that's when it becomes emotionally abusive. That's why it's sometimes very hard to tell what emotionally abusive behavior is and what it isn't. Anyway, let's get on to the rest of this letter. He says, one night I got home from work and I called her and she was out with her ex-boyfriend going for a late night drive. I felt like something clicked and I told her I need to get off the phone. And she didn't like that. I decided to do some research on boundaries and I wrote her a letter that night telling her what my boundaries were and things that I was happy with and unhappy with in the relationship. Well, her response was angry and charged. She said she felt disrespected. She couldn't believe I was upset, and all her changes toward me were bettering me. And she was surprised that I couldn't see that. Okay, so I have something to say in her defense and in your defense here. In her defense, it kind of sucks getting an email saying, this is how I want things. I mean, I get it. You know, today's day and age, this is how we convey information. I've worked with couples that have texted back and forth, that have emailed back and forth, and that's fine, and it's cute, and it's great, and it's all good when it's positive. But when you're bringing up the negative stuff, when you're bringing up the stuff like, you hurt me, you're being disrespectful, you're violating my boundaries, I understand that it's a lot easier to do it not in front of the person. I totally get that. And it gives them time to process it, to think about it. It gives you time to say it all without being stopped, without having to look at their face, without having to deal with the defensiveness or the anger or the upset. I get it. You have all this freedom to write everything just the way you want it. I just want you to be aware when you do that and you put the person in a space of reading all of this negativity. And with John, it's some positivity too, because he said the things he likes as well. And they read the whole thing. What you're going to get is a massive energy discharge from them. I mean, typically, what they'll do is read it and get more and more upset or furious or whatever it is. And then they'll be calling you or they'll be showing up and it'll be a lot more to handle than you might be able to handle. You might be exposed to something really big that is going to be very hard to handle. Yes, you will have said everything you need to say in a message, in an email, but now you're going to get this explosion back at you. It doesn't always happen that way. I mean, they could write an email back and say, well, this is what I think, and you can have a conversation like that. It can absolutely go that direction. I don't want to take that away from you because some people need to write it out. Some people just can't stand the person-to-person, one-on-one confrontation, face-to-face, and they need to write it all out because this is how they think clearly. If they're in front of the person, it's hard to think clearly, so they have to write it all out. That's great. That's fine. If it works, it's great. I'm just saying it can be really hard to get an email, especially with terms, and saying, these are my terms, and there's no interaction, and now you have to deal with the brunt force of this return message in whatever way it comes, and it's usually not as productive. So I can be on the fence with this. Yes, you can do it through a message. Yes, through email. But at the same time, if it's that important, if this is kind of like relationship continuing or relationship ending stuff, it's probably better to do it in person. One of the reasons that many people don't do it in person is because they just can't think on the fly. I get that too. They just cannot think in the moment, in the conversation, and the subject continually changes and they had all these things planned to say and they can't now say it, this is where you might want to write it down and bring it with you. Put all your bullet points on paper and say, you know what? I have all these points to make. I'm going to read them to you because I know the conversation is going to go into a different direction and I'm not going to be able to say what I need to say and I'm just going to do it this way. I'm not saying you have to do this. Some people just cannot operate like this. The fear of confrontation is too great, or they know that they will not be able to say everything they need to say in the way they need to say it in person. But I recommend that if it's this major in the relationship, that it probably should be talked about in person and not like, I don't know if this is an urban legend or not, but somebody faxing somebody else and saying, I want a divorce. I don't know if I heard that in a news story or if I read that or if it's or just a legend, but that's kind of what it feels like. What? Let's talk about this? No, let's not. Let's just end the relationship based on a piece of paper, based on an electronic message. Or let's just change major things about the relationship based on this. This is just food for thought. This part is just something that if you're the type of person that doesn't like to confront, just think a little bit more about this on how you want to convey the message of such powerful major components of going forward in the relationship. If my girlfriend sent something like that to me and these are my terms, I would not be happy about it. I'd be like, where did this come from? How do we get to a point where we're communicating via email? Are we so far removed from communicating with each other honestly and authentically that we have to do it this way? Again, I'm not putting you down if you do that, but just know that if you do it that way, if you send these major messages this way, things you need to talk about, it's usually identifying a communication problem or communication breakdown in the relationship already. And just a last point on this particular subject, you can also relay that the other person has things they want to say, but won't say them until it's safe enough to say them or they're alone a long enough time to send you a message instead of just saying it to your face. It's almost as if you know they're carrying around secrets, but you're sweeping those secrets under the rug and you don't want to talk about them now. And when you know someone else is carrying around information or secrets, you just have this feeling all the time that there is no closure, that there's something going on. You get this weird feeling that you're not trusted, that the other person doesn't feel safe around you. Because if they did, if all of that wasn't true, then they would talk to you. So that's what emailing or texting the negative stuff back and forth can do, is that it can actually create an air of suspicion and maybe even deception that can be sensed. All right, we're almost there. He goes on to say, I told her I was worried that there were red flags happening in this relationship. And then she sent me a text saying that she couldn't do this anymore and she was sorry for wasting my time. Well, there you go. Another absolute and on text. This is not happening person to person. They're not talking at all. And he actually said this was a red flag to her. And she's like, I don't want to deal with this. And, you know, she could have been right. Maybe I don't know her side of what John was doing to her. So John, she may have had some thoughts about the way you treated her. I don't know. I only have one side here. But from what you're telling me, if this is how it went down, you know, I'm worried. I see these red flags and she's like, well, too bad. I can't handle this. I'm leaving. You know, she may have dealt with people in the past that threw her under the bus all the time. And maybe that's where that came from. Or maybe she didn't like the idea that she couldn't control you. It could totally be that. And her comment about her bettering you, her making you better, and that she was surprised that you couldn't see that. Yeah, that's more emotional abuse. So there's a lot of signs pointing that she was being abusive in this relationship, or at least manipulative and probably controlling. He said, I didn't know how to respond. I couldn't sleep that whole night. I didn't respond back as I didn't know what to say. I felt like she just wanted to cut everything as soon as I had any criticism. But anytime she had criticism, I would try to fix it and make it work. The next day, I was exhausted and received another message from her. She was asking to meet up at night for either closure or just to talk about it all. I told her I'd rather see my friends, and I asked her to postpone to the next day. She told me that wasn't good enough. She couldn't keep embarrassing herself, and she blocked me so that I could no longer respond. I felt upset. I didn't know what to do. I realized the responses from her weren't that great, and I kept feeling like maybe this was the right choice, but I missed her. And I felt like all of this could have been a mistake. A few days later, on my way home from work, I felt a tap on my shoulder. It was her. She said she deserved a talk. She was angry. She said she couldn't believe I let all of this go and told me that I was holding her back in life. Oh boy, there's another manipulative comment. Sorry to say, John, but yeah, there's a lot of manipulation going on here. If she is holding you responsible for her decisions in life, that's what she's trying to guilt you into believing. Told me that I was holding her back in life and that things have already gotten so much better for her. So now she's trying to make you feel bad and things are getting better for her. I mean, this is kind of what I'm extrapolating from your letter. And after talking for a bit, I told her that I missed her and it hurt that she blocked me. And as I was saying that, she told me she slept with someone on the night I asked her to postpone the relationship. I felt like I'd been hit by a truck. I broke down crying. I couldn't believe it. She immediately changed and tried to hug me, but I told her I wanted to leave. I left and she unblocked me and tried to contact me over and over again. I eventually sent her a message apologizing that this relationship broke down and I feel like I couldn't talk to her again. She sent me back a long message saying how she was so sorry she hurt me by sleeping with someone else and that she still loved me. I haven't responded to her, but I heard that she is now dating someone else and things are looking up for her. I feel heartbroken. I still think about her. I know that things went bad. I worry that maybe I made a mistake somewhere. I know that there were red flags, but maybe I could have done something different. Maybe I approached the boundary setting message poorly. Maybe I shouldn't have postponed seeing her. I feel like a mess and I just want to know how to heal or how to avoid something like this in the future. Thank you so much for your time. I understand if you can't get to this in a timely manner. I think I also just wanted to vent. You're welcome. Thank you, John, for sharing all this. Absolutely vent. And I'm not getting to this in a timely manner. Sorry. It's been a while, but I wanted to read this on the air. A, just in case you are still feeling something about this. And B, because I know there are people out there that have gone through very similar things, have had very similar emotional states, feeling bad about a relationship, feeling bad about something that could have worked. And I want to answer a couple of your questions here at the end, where you said, maybe I could have done something different. No, you couldn't have. You couldn't have done anything different. I say that because the person you were was the person you were. The way you responded, the way you reacted, there's no way you could have done anything different. You know, I get this question a lot. I should have done something different. What could I have done differently? I should have responded differently. I should have said something else. You can't. You wouldn't have been able to. You didn't have the tools that you have now. You didn't have the hindsight that you have now. You didn't have anything that you needed to help you through that at the time. So don't feel bad about not doing something different. That's where I'm helping you release this. You don't have to feel bad about not doing something different. Everything you did was how you would have done if you went back in time and were the same exact person then, and you didn't know anything that was going to happen. You would have done the same things, you would have made the same choices, and you would have had the same results. So let yourself go there because there's absolutely nothing you can change and nothing you would have done differently. Of course you could have done something differently if you have a time machine and you know now what you didn't know then and you can bring that knowledge back, but that doesn't exist. So you can't. So let yourself go with that. There's nothing you would have done differently because you couldn't. You didn't know any better. You didn't have the tools. You didn't have the thoughts you have now. The question can be reworded. You can say, if I had done something different, what would have happened then? Yes, and that can also make you feel guilty because then you'll think, well, maybe I should have. But that's when you again return to, well, I couldn't have. There's no way I would have ever done that. And you can question yourself and obsess about it to death, and you'll never be able to get beyond that until you let yourself go and say, you know what? That's how I showed up. That's who I was. There's nothing I can do about it. One of the things that you said is maybe I approached the boundary setting message poorly. You did, but that's who you were. You know, I wouldn't have sent an email and you did. And that's fine. You know what? You messed up. And this is all about self-forgiveness right now. The things you're talking about here, well, not all about it, but this is where you say, you know what? I forgive myself for the way I showed up then. I take responsibility for my role in the breakdown of this relationship. Even though everything in your letter kind of points to her being controlling, being manipulative, being emotionally abusive, you know, I can pick those out of the letter, but you also take responsibility because you are in the relationship. You're exposing yourself to whatever behavior is going on. You are putting yourself in this position, which is your responsibility, your choice, and you are making decisions to continue the relationship or not, to send an email or not. Those are all choices that require you to take responsibility for. And so you say, I forgive myself for how I showed up then. I could have done better. I could have done different things. But you know what? I forgive myself a break. That's how I like to word it sometimes. I forgive myself a break for how I showed up, for not doing the things that were more productive, that were healthier for me, that were more open and honest in how I wanted to be. Because you should also think about forgiving yourself a break for not speaking up when she said, I want to look through your phone, and saying, what? What are you, insecure? Are you jealous? Here, you can absolutely look through my phone, but I don't appreciate this. I feel untrusted. And if you can't trust me, why are you here? I'm not saying you had to say that. I'm not saying that the conversation couldn't have been playful. I don't know if it was or not. But if the intent was to find out who you're talking to so that she can feel secure in herself, then maybe it was time to speak up and say, look, I don't appreciate this. I feel like you're not trusting me. And if you don't trust me, why are you in the relationship with me? So if that goes through your mind, then maybe you need to forgive yourself a break for not standing up and saying something when these red flags came up. You did say things. You did speak up for yourself, but not for everything. When certain flags arose, perhaps that was the time to speak up and not later. But that's what you learn and you take with you into the next relationship. So forgive yourself there. And finally, you say, I feel heartbroken. I still think about her. I feel like a mess. And I just don't know how to heal. You know, healing from the end of a relationship is all about understanding that when someone is no longer with us, then a part of us is missing because we have identified ourselves as us, as we, as you and me. Her and you were a couple. That was your identity. I identify myself as me and my girlfriend. That's how I identify myself. It's part of me. The relationship is part of me. And if she were to leave or worse, die, then that part of me would disappear. I would feel like a part of my identity was gone. And it would hurt. And I would feel empty. And I would feel alone. And I would definitely need to grieve. I would need to go through the process of grieving because it was the death of a part of me. The end of a relationship is like a death, and you may need to grieve it. So yes, you're going to go through some grieving stages, and you should allow yourself to do that. And you should allow yourself to be angry. And you should acknowledge that a part of you is now missing. It's a void. It's not there. And then after you go through this, could take weeks, could take months. After you go through this grieving and understanding that there's a part of you missing, this is where you start to fill that part of you back up with something else. I didn't say someone else, although that helps too, but with something else. It's self-nurturing. It's self-love. It's taking care of yourself as if you were your own best friend. It's self-compassion. It's self-respect. It's self-worth. Everything needs to rise up again in you so that you don't take half a heart into the next relationship. I hope that makes sense. You and the piece that's missing into the next relationship, because if you do that, you develop dependencies, you develop dysfunction, because what you're doing is now seeking happiness from someone else instead of bringing happiness into the relationship. When you can bring a fuller, more whole version of yourself into a relationship, that's when a relationship can prosper. You in the past may not have been whole in a manner of speaking, because when you're whole, when you hold yourself in higher regard, knowing that you deserve better, because that's part of wholeness, that's part of being fully integrated, fully yourself, knowing that you are worth more and that you deserve to be treated better and that you deserve people that treat you well with respect. This is what I was talking about in the first segment, holding yourself in high regard. And this is what this entire episode's about when it comes to the type of behavior that you'll allow in your life. Because you must hold yourself in higher regard for those who don't regard your feelings. You must regard your feelings when others don't. You must bring up the red flags and talk about them at the risk of the relationship ending. Because it's so important to bring up the behaviors especially in the first few months, that you don't want to see again, that you don't want to experience again, that you don't want to amplify and get worse. So it's, in my opinion, vital that you bring up the red flags, even at the risk of the relationship ending. And John, in your case, you did. You know, from what you told me, you brought him up. May not have been the best way to approach it, but you did. So you did the right thing. And those who love you and support you and care about you are going to say, like I said in the last segment, oh my God, I'm so sorry. I didn't realize I was violating all those boundaries. I didn't realize that. She has every right to be mad too. I'm not saying that's not true either. If somebody gave me a list of boundaries that I was violating out of the blue, I'd probably be pretty ticked off too. What? I'm violating all these boundaries? Why didn't you tell me like 3 months ago? Why didn't you tell me last week? Suddenly it comes in an email. Probably not the best approach. You're right. But because I love the person I'm with and I care about the person I'm with and I don't want to hurt the person, I'm also going to take it seriously and realize, oh, I was doing that stuff. Yes, I'm angry that you presented it to me this way, but now I realize what I've been doing and I'm so sorry. Because I care about you and I respect you and I want you to be happy. And if all of these things that I'm doing are making you unhappy, I need to look at that. And either I need to figure that out. Am I doing something that is intentionally hurting you? Or am I doing things that I believe are okay? Because if I believe they're okay, then maybe you're not the right person for me. You know, if I'm talking to my partner and I believe I'm doing the right thing and I'm doing good things, and they say it's a violation of their boundaries and values and what they hold near and dear, then maybe I'm not the right person because I'm pretty damn proud of who I am. That's where I think you need to be, is being pretty damn proud of who you are. Because when you're constantly trying to do the right thing, being nice, being respectful, supporting the other person's happiness, then you can look back at yourself and go, you know what? I'm doing a pretty good job, I think. But also be willing to talk about something that perhaps they think you're not doing right, and maybe you aren't. Maybe there's something that got past your own radar and you realized, oh, I didn't know I was doing that. And the reason I say bring up these flags, even at the risk of the relationship ending, is because when your relationship endures this kind of communication, it grows stronger and stronger and stronger. And, you know, a healthy relationship doesn't end when you bring up sensitive subjects. It's supposed to strengthen. Because once you bring up the hard truths, you push the relationship deeper than ever into vulnerability, which is closer to the heart. The unhealthy relationship, one that sweeps things under the rug so that you never discuss the sensitive subjects, that causes you to get further and further away from the heart. So bringing up the hard stuff, talking about the hard truths, gets closer and closer to the heart, which is scary. Because once your heart is exposed, you're vulnerable to attack, but you're also vulnerable to the greatest love you could possibly have. But the kind of relationship that doesn't talk, that doesn't express, that doesn't communicate, and never talks about the hard truths, only surrounds the heart with emotional armor when nobody can ever connect with you at the deepest level. And when you surround your heart with all this armor and keep this buffer between you and the world, what becomes reality is speculation, suspicion, interpretation, fear, because you don't know the truth. When someone's heart is surrounded like that and they're not sharing and they're not expressing and they don't feel safe to be themselves around you, then all you have is speculation and suspicion and interpretation and all the fears that come with, I wonder what they're thinking. That's why the hard truths, when you talk about them, are so important to express to each other. And let me just end the show with one last thing, and it was regarding someone from your past, an ex, and being friends with them or being closer than friends, but not romantic. I touched on that a little bit, but I want to just explain perhaps what I mean about the how much energy you give to that relationship as opposed to your own. My question when it comes to people in your life, especially a past romantic partner, has to do with two or three things. One of them is a question that you ask yourself. Let's just say that your partner has an ex that they're friends with. Is your partner taking energy away from your relationship? Meaning, are they spending time with their ex that you feel should be spent with you? Or is it like on a night that you go out with the boys or the girls and you don't mind if they go see a friend or friends because you trust each other, it's no big deal? If that's the case, then they're not really taking energy away from the relationship. But if you got Friday night planned and you always make dinner and their ex calls out of the blue and they say they want to spend time with them and then they go spend time with them and you're left hanging, that's when there's energy being taken away. I mean, Depends on who you are and how this is arranged in your relationship, but I like to look at it if my girlfriend was spending time with her ex and it felt intrusive on our time. And it wasn't about my jealousy or insecurity or anything dysfunctional that came up, but it was an actual observation that I made. And I thought, wait, this doesn't seem right. You're spending a lot of time with this guy and I want to take you out. I want to go to those places. I want to talk about those things and you're sharing with him. That doesn't make me feel very good. That's just an assessment that you need to make for yourself. Another thing about that is, do you feel restricted from their relationship? Like in John's case, if he's really family, John, then I can assume that you're welcome into her family. Am I right? Meaning, is she restricting their relationship from you? Or do you feel welcome anytime they go out? I think that's important. I'm not saying it's a rule. I just think that it makes more sense that you feel welcome instead of restricted. It makes more sense to me that she feels comfortable talking in the same room with him on the phone and you can hear everything she says. I'm not saying it has to be that way. I'm just saying that there's a comfortable feeling instead of a, oh, my boyfriend's listening. I can't talk about that now. That's when it gets a little bit weird. And the final thing I want to say on that, and I promise this is the end of what I'm talking about here because I'm way over time, is regarding your partner being with someone, having a friend as an ex, when things are rough in your relationship, does your partner find solace and comfort in their presence? Now, I think this is kind of dangerous when it comes to an ex-partner because of the imprint that they've had on one another from the past. This is when they feel so safe with one another that their hearts are close because the armor's off and they trust and they feel good with each other. Not saying it could develop into something, it may or may not, but how does that feel with you not having that same connection? And I swear, I'm not saying this to make anyone suspicious about any type of relationship that your partner has, if you're in a relationship at all. I'm just saying this, that if all of these dots connect, if everything I'm talking about has a bigger picture being painted, then it's time to talk about it. It's time to bring it up. And there should be a lot of understanding. A healthy relationship is going to be a lot of understanding. The unhealthy relationship, there might be control and guilting and shaming and all that other stuff. So that's all I have to say about this. I'm going to end the show momentarily. I don't have too many last words because we're out of time. But I'm going to come back, say some goodbyes and some thank yous. And my final words after this. Thank you for listening to another episode of The Overwhelmed Brain. Remember that stuff on anxiety? Go to quietbegins.com. And check out the Safe Empowerment System for Social Anxiety. I think you'll find it's a masterclass on educating you so that you can graduate into a better emotional space. QuietBegins.com. And I want to thank two people, Veronica and Maggie, for donating to the show. Maggie, you are awesome. Veronica, you are awesome. We've connected through email and Facebook, I think, quite a few times. I appreciate both of you. Thank you so much for donating. Anyone that donates to the show, of course, patron.theoverwhelmedbrain.com is where you can donate if you feel this show is valuable to you. The Patreon membership program has all kinds of private episodes and workbooks and discounts on the products I have and even discounts on my coaching services. So if you're looking to coach with me, join the Patreon program. You'll be giving and getting. And I like win-win like that. So thanks again, patron.theoverwhelmedbrain.com. Thank you, Patreon members. I appreciate all of you. And yes, we were talking about relationships. My other podcast, Love and Abuse, is all about difficult relationships, toxic relationships, manipulative and coercive behavior, controlling behavior. If you're interested in that at all and you want to find out more and you want to hear more about how to deal with the effects of difficult and complex relationship issues, head over to loveandabuse.com. And of course, that's where you can get the Mean Workbook and get your Mean Score to tell you the level of manipulation and emotional abuse in your relationship. loveandabuse.com. And finally, I'd like to thank Kevin McLeod of incompetech.com for some of the music transitions in The Overwhelmed Brain. Like I said, I don't have much to say at the end here. I usually say something, but I filled the show. Filled it. with so much content. I think you're ready. I think your brain is fried. And if it's not from over information, it's just because I'm talking way too much today and I want to give you a break. So with that, keep your mind open so that you can step into your power. This will help you be firm in your decisions and actions so that you can create the life you want. Always take steps to grow and evolve. You are powerful beyond measure. And above all, and this is something I absolutely know to be true about you, you are amazing.
Hey, scientists, how critical is pure water to you? In this new podcast, Lab Water Stories Unfiltered, we at Millipore Sigma look closer at this often overlooked lab essential. Tune in as experts drop tips and insights not found in textbooks, taken from their work with Millikue Lab Water Solutions. Lab Water Stories Unfiltered. Find it wherever you get your podcasts. Millipore Sigma is the U.S. and Canada life science business of Merck KGaA Darmstadt, Germany.
The first taste of rare bourbon you finally got your hands on. That's nice. At Caskers.com, we make this experience easy. Caskers is a one-stop spirit curator with an impressive selection of exclusive, sought-after, rare, and household names in the realm of premium spirits and champagne. Discover the top flavors of the year now by going to Caskers.com and using code WELCOME10 for $10 off your first purchase. Get $10 off your first purchase with code WELCOME10 at Caskers.com.